Well, good evening. Welcome to St. John's. It's lovely to see you. If you're here just visiting because you're visiting relatives, a very warm welcome to you. But as I've just been sitting there listening, it struck me again how tremendous, how awe-inspiring the story of Christmas is. I mean, just take that song. O come, thou Lord of David's key. That's referring to Jesus as the key of David. Because he's going to fling wide open the gates of heaven. Which means we live in a time, because the gates of heaven are now open, any one of us can walk in. And then we were singing that great hymn, Peace on Earth and Mercy Mild. God and sinners reconciled. I mean, just think of that. That you as an individual could be reconciled with your Creator. That the great chasm that exists between you and God, that great chasm can be crossed. That's what Christmas is about, really. And you know, as I was listening to the readings and singing the songs and the carols, I had to remind myself that all these are events that happened in history. These events happened in space and time. They happened in this world. When a governor called Pontius Pilate was ruling in Judea and Quirinius was the governor in Syria, which means that, of course, this is not a myth. This is not something that's been made up. That's why Christianity is called good news. That's what gospel means. It means good news. Because news is the proclamation of an event that's happened in history. And that it's important that you know about this news. That's why there's constant 24-hour rolling news. Why do we have rolling news? Because people are saying, look, there's stuff happening in the world that you need to know about. Because these events can be either for your good or for your harm. And so you need to know about these things. You need to know when we go to war. We need to know when peace has been declared. We need to know what the results of Brexit are going to be. Because these things will affect you. So you need to know about them. Now, it's really interesting when Luke, for example, sets about to write his gospel. He's writing it for a friend called Theophilus. And you get the impression that Theophilus doesn't really believe. You see, Theophilus is a bit skeptical. So when Luke's writing this story, he says, look, Theophilus, you've got to understand, I spoke to all these eyewitnesses. I went and I researched everything from the very beginning so that you may know the certainty of these things. That's what Luke says. And what becomes clear when Luke talks to these eyewitnesses, when he goes to talk to Zechariah and Simeon and Elizabeth and Mary and the shepherds, when he goes talks to all of them, they all come up with a story. It's the same story. It says, look, they said, we were sitting in darkness, but now we're in the light. We were in the darkness, And suddenly there was light. Simeon says that the birth of Jesus Christ was a light for revelation to the Gentiles. It's kind of like a new creation. Because that's how the creation starts. It's in the darkness. And then the first words that God speaks are, "Let there be light." And then there's light. And so what Luke discovered when he was talking to Simeon and Zechariah and all these people, they were saying, look, we were in the darkness. The shepherds were in the darkness by night watching their flocks. And suddenly, boom, light. And what Luke discovered is that all these people were referring back to the Old Testament. That's why we had these Old Testament readings. And one of the prophets of the Old Testament, Isaiah, who was prophesying about 700 years before Christ, he said, "The people sitting in darkness have seen a great light." And then he says that a child's going to be born, a man's going to be born, and he's going to come to Galilee, Galilee of the Gentiles. Which means Galilee of the outcasts. Galilee of the meek and lowly. Galilee of the leper. Galilee of the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. Galilee of all those men and women who know that they cannot save themselves, but they need to be saved. A man is coming from Nazareth, of all places, Nazareth. He's coming in meekness, as a child, as a baby, born of a woman called Mary. Who's ever heard of her? And they're refugees. And they've got no place to lay their heads. Born in weakness and disgrace, who marked his birth? Shepherds and donkeys and strange kings who spoke exotic languages and came from distant lands. All this is history. All this is news. And the question then for us is, I guess, is how are you going to respond to this news? What are you going to do with this information? Now, I say that because actually what Luke and the other gospel readers do is that they record how people reacted to this. That there was this king coming who was going to be the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. A king who's going to sit on David's throne and he's going to establish it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forevermore. This is an eternal kingdom. How are you going to react to this news? What is so fascinating as you thumb through the Gospels as you come across various people. One of the first people you come across is King Herod. King Herod was the Jewish puppet king ruling in Jerusalem. He was allowed to breathe because Augustus Caesar in Rome allowed him to have this throne. And when he heard about Zechariah and Simeon and the shepherds, that the world is a dark place, Herod the Great would have gone, yes, it is a dark place. This is a dark world. And it is a dark world, isn't it? It is a dark world. Tsunamis. Disease. And in this dark world, dreams can just go. Disappointments can come thick and fast. Love evaporates. Marriages collapse. Jobs are lost. Many, many years ago, when I was first a vicar, I was in deepest, darkest rural Devon. And one of my first duties as the priest was to go visit this man, and he was dying, and it's about October, November time, and I went to the farm, and it was in the dark, and there were no lights on in the house, and his wife let me in, and I went upstairs to his bedroom, and I sat in the gloom, and didn't say anything. He knew I was there, but I didn't know what to say. I mean, what do you say? So he just sat there, and I just sat there, and he eventually said, "You know, at the end of the day, you've only got yourself. At the end of the day, I will die alone. Oh, I know there'll be people around me, but I'll die alone." He says it's a dark world, and Herod would have said, "Yes, it is a dark world. We're living in this deep darkness." And you know how Herod coped with the darkness? And I've met people who cope with darkness like this. They say, "You're right, we live in a dark world. I'm going to be darker than the dark world." Have you ever met people like that? No matter what you say to them, they say, "Bah, humbug." They've got no hope. They live in despair. They don't believe in light. All this myth, all this sentimental nonsense about a light coming into the world. Bah, humbug. Isn't that what Scrooge says? Didn't Scrooge say that? "If anyone says Merry Christmas to me one more time, I'm going to boil him in his own pudding and put a stake of holly through his heart." Well, that's how you can cope with this dark world. You just become dark yourself. Then nothing can touch you. Then nothing can harm you. Because you get in there first. And Herod had 3 of his 10 wives executed. 2 of his sons were hanged. And when he heard of Jesus Christ, the light of this world, that the light of the world had come into his kingdom, he went out and destroyed and put to the sword all young boys 2 and under in the whole area of Jerusalem. But other people say, "Oh, come on. It's not that bad." And Quirinius, the governor of Syria, was like that. Quirinius, as I said, if he was the Jewish puppet king, Quirinius was the governor of Syria. And that meant that he had hope. Because life for Quirinius was absolutely fantastic. And the reason why it's fantastic is because Caesar Augustus was in Rome. And Caesar and Quirinius were like the best pals. They were good mates. Because what had happened is that Augustus had inherited the empire because his uncle, Julius Caesar, had been murdered. And what Caesar Augustus proceeded to do was to go throughout the ancient world, killing off all the people who had murdered his uncle. So Antony and Cleopatra committed suicide. Pompey was killed after the Battle of Pharsalus. And when Augustus went to put on games that celebrated his victory, lo and behold, this amazing comet flew over Rome. A light in the sky. And they all said, "It's the gods. The gods are blessing you, Caesar Augustus." And he took on this title. He was called the Son of the Divine Augustus, which meant he is the Son of God. His title was Sol Invictus, the unquenchable light. And that title that he was the divine son of the divine Augustus was stamped on every single coin. It was on every public building. It was everywhere. And everybody in the world had to acknowledge that Caesar Augustus was about to usher in a new age, a new dawn. An era of peace when every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood was destined to for the burning was going to be fuel for the fire because he's going to rule the world and bring the Pax Romana. And think of his power. He could rule that everybody in his empire had to go back home where they're going to be taxed. And then the coffers are going to swell. So Quirinius is going, oh, yes. Fantastic. It is fantastic, isn't it? Brilliant. Who wouldn't like that? Except there was a little local difficulty that Quirinius forgot about. He forgot about what we read in our first reading, that dust we are, and to dust we shall return. He completely forgot that one day he was going to step from time and into eternity. And so he made no provision for that eventuality. And you know, because he forgot that, he thought he had everything. And he didn't need Jesus Christ. You know, in John's Gospel, it says that Jesus Christ came to his own, and his own did not receive him. Herod didn't need him, because he's darker than the dark. Quirinius doesn't need him, because he's as rich as Croesus. But he forgot that one day the light of Caesar Augustus would be snuffed out. Jesus said, "What is a man advantaged if he gains the whole world and then loses his soul?" And far from Caesar Augustus being the sole invictus, the invincible light, Jesus Christ said, "I am the light of the world. I am the unconquered sun. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." So King Herod, bah, humbug. Quirinius, I've got my millions. Why do I need Jesus Christ? How are you going to react to this news? There were shepherds, and they were sitting in the darkness as well. There they were in the darkness, minding their flocks. But unlike Quirinius and unlike King Herod, they rush to the stable. Simple shepherds. But how much wiser than Caesar? How much wiser than Quirinius? They rush to the stable. Luke tells us that in haste, they went and found Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in the manger. And they thought, here he is. This is God's word to us. Isn't that what John said? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word became flesh. That means he became a human being. He took on human flesh, and he came down into this world. You see, God doesn't sit in heaven marking your scorecard. What God does is he sends his Son down into this world, and the shepherds didn't say, "Bah, humbug." They couldn't believe what they'd seen. They didn't say, I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul. Neither did they say, I've got my own light. I've got my bank accounts. What did they say? They said a prayer. I'm guessing it went something like this. Now, some of you may want to say this prayer yourselves, but it's the way to connect with your Creator who became flesh. They would have said something along these lines, Dear Jesus Christ, eternal Son of the living God, second person of the Trinity made flesh, I live in a dark world. And it's also dark in my soul. Come into my heart and shed abroad your life-giving eternal light. Raise me out of the dust of death, you conqueror of death. On the cross, all my darkness fell into your soul, and you died in my place. Forgive me all my sins, I pray. I receive you into my life. Accept me, I pray, and I submit to you my body, my mind, and my soul, for you are the eternal King, the Lord of lords, and the only ruler of princes. And cause me to live for you for the rest of my earthly life. Amen. Will you pray that prayer, or will you be like Herod, or like Quirinius?